Don't be afraid, little man. I won't bite.
That's not helping.
Who's next?
The Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 11.
Welcome to episode 11 of the Secret Origins Podcast. I am your host, TFGM and Mike, and joining me, as usual, is Lupus Convoy. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How goes it?
It goes, how are you? You sound a hell of a lot better than you did in the last two episodes.
I am not sick.
Yay! today we'll be reviewing the final story of Justice League Season 2. This was also... potentially, it could have been the actual end of Justice League. They were not sure if they would be doing any more Justice League, so it wasn't just a season finale. It quite possibly could have been a series finale. And they wanted to go out with a bang. Boy, did they ever. It's like, Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
Behold my mighty... associated lantern powers. Wow.
Yeah. Those lantern batteries take a while to charge, though.
Yeah, it's true. I'm still kind of confused on what I'm supposed to be saying for an oath, so...
So, what have you been up to, sir?
Studying and working and playing with new toys and studying and... yeah, that's pretty much it. The usual. Getting ready for state government exams for the National Nursing Association so I can be all spiffy and legal and get into my programs.
Yeah.
And apparently it is a nightmare. To give all the listeners an idea of how it works, it's a three-part exam, kind of like the SATs. One section's math, one's English, one's sciences... and there are some questions that will throw you. Like, my friend got, which is the oldest of the four items listed below? A, fossil. B, fossil. C, fossil. D, fossil. She never could figure out what the answer was, because it was all the same question.
Wow. But
yeah, if you thought the SATs were bad, just wait till you guys take this.
Yes, since our last episode, a lot of crap has happened. Mom and I are... I'm trying to help my mom do this whole moving sale thing, so that's going on. We've made some money off the stuff. It's mainly she just wants to get rid of all the crap that she can't take with her, wherever she's going to move to. And, you know, and it's like, yikes. Let's see what else. As we're recording this, it won't air until the 5th. Well, today's the 15th. It won't air until the 22nd, but as of today, June 15th, I woke up, I went to sleep last night around 12:30. And for some strange reason, my body woke me up at 3:45 this morning. Don't ask me why, I have no idea. So I'm like, alright, fine, whatever, I'll come out and I'll check email and harass people on Twitter and whatever. So I turn my TV on. And it's been doing this one thing for a little while where as soon as you turn it on, the image flickers and flickers until it finally straightens itself out. So I turn it on, and it does the flickering bit for about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes. And it finally straightens itself out. At 6 o'clock, I started getting tired again, because I hadn't actually gotten a full night's sleep. So I'm like, alright, well, I just muted the TV, left it on, went back in the bedroom to lay down. Well, that wasn't happening. I wasn't going back to sleep. So an hour later, at 7 o'clock, I come back out here, and the TV has a black screen on it. No image, no nothing. So I'm thinking, alright, fine, whatever. I tried changing channels, tried doing volume, turn it off, turn it on. And then it starts automatically, because the green light, if the green light's on, the TV's on. If it's off, it's off. On the actual console. And it'd stay on for about 2 seconds, it'd go off and then come back on automatically by itself. And I was getting no picture. No red lines, no nothing. There was no picture whatsoever. It wasn't like it was fully turning on, so I'm assuming it's a power issue. Well, I have had this TV since 2006. Magnavox, because they no longer manufacture the shit in TV, they won't offer support for it. So, unless I take it to a TV repair shop and see what they can do, I'm pretty much fucked on having a TV.
Sorry.
I mean, this is, at the time, and it still is, it's a nice 32-inch flat panel Magnavox. It has one issue with the left speaker, because actually, you know how you have, like on your monitor, you have the edges of the monitor that are part of it, but it's not actual screen size?
Right.
Okay. So on this, same thing, but the edges are wider because that's where the speakers are. They're whole on the left and right side, they're giant speakers. Well, there's something wrong with that as well. I don't know what the deal is with that, but the left one keeps fading in and out. It doesn't really bother me so much. I mean, it still works. The sound still comes out fine. But yeah, now it's... I don't know what's wrong with it. I have no clue. It sucks.
Well, hopefully somebody can help you with a new TV.
Yeah, right. I'm going to need to find a sugar mama for that. Because I looked at... I was pricing them on Best Buy, and they range from, depending on what size you want, from $300 to over $4,000. And obviously, I don't need a $4,000 TV. I mean, this one, when we originally bought it, it was in 2006, and we paid $1,200, but that was also, the $1,200 was, it was the additional protection plan through Best Buy, which... After 4 years, because I don't think we bought a 4-year plan, so they're not going to do anything about it, and hell, they don't even sell the damn TV anymore because Magnavox no longer manufactures the TV. But I was pricing them on Best Buy, and for a 40-inch TV, I can get for like $650. Problem is having
$650.
Exactly. I can't exactly pull $650 out of my ass. That would be an awesome...
If you could, that would be very uncomfortable.
Well, but it would be a hell of an awesome superpower.
Okay, I have to plug this. There's a book out called Playing for Keeps, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was written by Mer Lafferty, and it's all about... people that have superpowers that really suck. Like a barmaid that can keep any flat, like, bar tray And she can turn it upside down and nothing will fall off of it. She can completely control it. Or the man that has the really crappiest power is the ability to project at a fire hose strength feces from his hands. And the guy is stuck working as a janitor. But if you guys want to go check it out on patiobooks.com, it's free to download, and it was amazingly good. But that kind of fits with the whole podcast, so.
I guess. I don't know about
with
that. Yeah. Just a couple of other notes that I took these notes off the commentary, because I don't know if you listened to the commentary for part 3. I did, and they point out a couple of things. I kind of already mentioned the whole fact of they weren't sure about the series continuing. That's why they wanted to go out with a bang. Maria Canales Barrera she's Barrera now. She was just Maria Canales back then, but she was very upset that she was no longer in the league. Bruce Timm said that they would bring her back, but not right away. And they say in the commentary, like, she was really pissed. She was really pissed. I believe they said that Hot Girl was her like most favorite character she's ever done, and she really wanted to come back. And Bruce Timm's like, well, we're gonna bring you back, but we're not yet. We need to give it a little time.
Did you see how pissed off your coworkers were? Do you think they're just gonna walk him back with open arms? It's gonna take a bit.
Yeah. And the other note I made was when they're talking about the GL Grotalic battle, mm-hmm. and Gro cuts the ring off. And Bruce Timm in the commentary says, the fans hated us for that. They're like, you can't do that. It's unbreakable. You can't break a Green Lantern's ring. And then right. Bruce Timm says who? Well, it's DC Comics lore. I don't care.
Oh. They're dying. Yeah, I was like, what the? No. Okay,
but
we'll
get into that when we get to that part, but I'm just saying that that's just what Bruce Timm said. And I like how, and it's, I hope to God people don't watch this episode and listen to, or don't watch this three-parter with the commentary on the third part before they actually watch the entire thing, because really we don't know at the end of this three-parter where she's going to go. But Bruce Timm basically says she went and hit out at Dr. Fate's house. I don't know. He just kind of throws that out there in the third part of the commentary, or the third part commentary. And turns out when we get to Unlimited in the return, guess where Hot Girl was?
Chilling out. Well, maybe she was hanging with Alfred.
Yeah, her and Enzo were getting on. that's funny.
Lesbian hot wing sex.
See, now even you're doing the hot wing sex jokes.
I might as well come from someone from the gay community. Lesbian gay joke.
Alright, so I guess we're going to get into some episodes.
Diana, cover our tracks.
That X-ray vision working yet?
Just enough to see Hawk soldiers still patrolling the skies.
They'll have the whole city covered by now.
Who knows? Maybe they'll get tired and go home. Yeah, I know. But a little optimism at a time like this couldn't hurt.
This is the voice of the Thanagarian Occupational Authority. Your so-called Justice League is in violation of our martial law. They are to be considered an enemy and dealt with on sight. Any person found aiding or harboring them will be summarily punished.
Okay, so much for optimism.
For the time being, we're going to have to go underground.
How exactly do we hide when the entire planet is looking for us?
They're looking for the Justice League. Without our costumes, we are merely ordinary citizens.
Hold on a second here. What about the whole secret identity thing? I mean, I trust you guys, but I'm not sure I'm ready to...
Wally West, Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne... Show off.
Red hair. It suits you.
You think? Change now.
Well, as we said in the intro, this is the final story of Justice League, Star-Crossed. Which, hello, Shakespeare. In part one, the League is staking out a conference of world leaders based on a tip Batman received that a terrorist incident may occur. Superman, as Clark Kent, is watching the conference from inside among the press corps. Outside, Jon Stewart steals a few seconds to flirt with Hot Girl. Suddenly, a greater menace appears in the sky, an alien battleship that opens fire. None of the U.S. military's weapons can hurt it before the League attacks an even larger alien battleship appears and downs the attacking craft, which crashes. Hot Girl recognizes the newcomer as the ship of her people, the Thanagarians. The ship's commander, Hro Talek, asks to meet with the Earth's leaders. He reveals that Hot Girl has been lying to her teammates. She did not arrive on Earth by accident, nor is she a law enforcement officer. Rather, she is a lieutenant in the Thanagarian military, and was sent to Earth as an advanced scout and sort of ambassador to prepare for their arrival. Talek explains that for decades, Thanagar has been at war with a vicious alien race, the Gordanians. Now the Gordanians have targeted Earth for an invasion, and Talek offers to help. Let's see. Jon confronts Hot Girl, asking her what else she has kept secret. Having seen the power of the Gordanian ship, Earth's leaders feel they have little choice and accept the Thanagarians' offer. Immediately, they begin constructing a massive force field generator in the Gobi Desert, which they say will provide a planetary defense shield. The Justice League aids in the construction. Batman is suspicious, as always, and examines the remains of the Gordanian battleship. He finds that all the Gordanians were dead long before the ship appeared on Earth, meaning the attack was a ruse. He sneaks on board the Thanagarian mothership as a delegate. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Before diverting away from the main group and enters the command center, he overhears a communication between Talek and the leaders on Thanagar that the Gordanians are closing in on their home world. Krager finds Batman, and the brief tussle between Batman and some Thanagarians ensues. Krager manages to knock Batman out, but Talek orders Batman locked up. The Thanagarians turn on the Justice League, taking them prisoner. Jon tries to fight his way free, but Hot Girl tricks him into lowering his powering, and then knocks him out and takes his ring. A Thanagarian unit takes control of the Watchtower, while the rest of the forces occupy Earth. Thoughts?
Wow. Bam, 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 one thing after another with this episode.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's see, The Flash's comment about not even a sleazy politician, he hasn't been looking hard enough. Just proof right there. The awe moments of the superhero sweethearts, flirtation and smooching. Aw, we know it's not going to last. Poor Clark having to deal with Lois on the other end, dealing with a trash strike. Yikes, no wonder she wasn't happy. Okay, I have to ask this. Doesn't Clark get really, really hot wearing two outfits? Because he's wearing a full, like, three-piece suit and his Superman outfit underneath that. Where did he put the cape?
I honestly... Maybe he tucks it in like a long t-shirt. I honestly don't know.
It doesn't really... It's something that's always bothered me. It's like, wow, you've got to get really, really hot wearing all that. I noticed... Because I'm a Transformers geek, we see F-22 Raptors being used.
Yep.
And I was like, ooh, Starscream, yay.
No, Starscream, I don't care if it's an F-22 Raptor. Starscream is not in Justice League, no. Starscream.
Okay, so first we see a massive armada in the beginning, and then when they do the whole, okay, we're going to take over the Earth, even more come out. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're there to help, sure. So, my thoughts when we first see Hro Talek is, okay, he's very dramatic, but at least he gets to the point, and that solves so many issues with superheroes and fighting. As we've seen in these episodes, you know, they don't say anything, they get in a huge fight. No, he gets right to the point, and wham, bam, okay, things are progressing with the story, they're not just duking it out. Let's see. Hawkgirl is... Oh, God, she's a bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, just from the beginning, you know, 5 years, and then she's making all these jokes about, oh, the Just Us League, you know, trying to get her way into everyone's good graces. When we first get introduced to the Gordanians, I was wondering, do they worship Cthulhu or Cthulhu?
Yeah.
The whole prior, you know, mythology that we've got going on about the Thanagarians rejecting Cthulhu, and is this a religious war that's going on? What's the basis for it?
I don't know.
Let's see, are they, like, the Ran? Is that what this is supposed to echo, the Ran-Thanagarian War from the comics that came out recently? But I feel really bad for Green Lantern in this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that he just really gets fucked over.
Yes, yes, he does.
The poor guy, like, he's, you know, got this great relationship that he's finally won, and, you know, he's finally agreeing to a relationship with her, and he's admitting his feelings, and he's coming to terms with this. And the girl's been, you know, married to somebody for a while, and, you know...
Yeah.
He's totally shattered in her, not only just, oh, by the way, I'm actually a military spy, but, oh, I'm not really in love with you. Whoops.
Well, now, wait a second. She didn't actually say that she wasn't in love with GL. She just said that she has been betrothed to this...
Yeah.
Asshole.
Saying otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, I really do love you. I just stuck in this position. No, nothing about that. So we've got them saying the Earth's defenses aren't really great. Well, they're also being covered by the Green Lantern Corps. Isn't that what they're there for? And they've got all these superheroes. Again, what? Isn't that what that's there for?
Yeah. But at the same time, though, really, I mean, honestly, you take Batman out, you know, you got six, quote-unquote, well, Batman and Flash are questionable, but, you know, if you take those two out, you got five really super-powered beings, four, now that Hawkgirl, fuck, well, take Hawkgirl, Batman, and Flash out, you got four really super-powerful beings, but they're only four people. Four people can't, you know, control half the world, or even the entire world. Hell, they can barely, you know, monitor the entire planet as seven people, let alone just four people.
True. Let's see, what else? Yeah, interesting note of Jean not being able to read Hawkgirl's mind.
Yep.
Now, was there ever a scene that we've seen so far where he's trying to contact her, or trying to track her? Psychically? He's tried doing that with Superman and Batman.
But see, Batman and Superman are open to it. I don't know what it is about Hawkgirl or the Thanagarians that they're not open to mind probe or whatever. Oh, wow. Why is Cartman flashing into my head? Anyway, anyways.
Maybe think of the helmets from X-Men.
Yeah, but I'm not really sure because what was it? Only a Dream, where he didn't know. He never did. I don't think he ever broke into Hawkgirl's mind. In Only a Dream, he broke into Superman's, GL's, and Flash's minds.
But he never went into hers.
And then they were all going to go to hers. But they couldn't, and they cut away to the whole Batman humming whatever he's going to hum, and then kicking Dr. Destiny's ass. So they never actually did it.
But it just makes me wonder, if Jean can't get in there, why did Dr. Destiny then? Anyway, it was just one of those things, like, I wasn't sure if we had seen something to the contrary so far in the series.
Yeah.
But at the same token, he did say that he wouldn't go into people's minds out of common courtesy, because it just isn't done in Martian society. So, okay, when she's eating questionable foods. I wasn't quite sure if that was supposed to be a kidney or an oyster. Like, seriously, like, what is she eating? Because that's kind of disgusting. But then again, we've seen what...
You're getting into your part two notes, though. That have
No, we've seen...
Oh, okay, you're talking about when... When you're talking about Hro is trying to romance her. Okay, I thought you...
Yeah, I remember them being your favorites. You know, she's picking up these very... They look like oysters, but there's no shell. And I'm kind of going, no eel heads. What was that? What else? Krager. He made some really great points. The second command, Krager.
Yep.
It's always great to have someone that is overly cautious and practical. And I couldn't help but think of a character from the Harry Dresden books where the Red King has got this character who, a big bad vampire dude that's about to wipe out, 90% of humanity, and he's got a spy that, everyone trusted, and he is the ultimate practical person that nobody pays attention to, and he's always there for the most practical, overly cautious plans.
Yeah.
So if you want somebody that's going to be your second command, you want somebody like that. And instead he gets bitch slapped. I really dug her outfit in this, like her military outfit. It definitely showed like how much of a flip she was from the hot girl that we've seen and loved so far.
Yeah.
This is a section where the episode where they talk about the frozen liver.
Yes, it is.
Okay, liver cells are extremely, extremely, if you know what a liver cell looks like, you know what a liver cell looks like. It's very, it's got certain characteristics. When it comes to cellular damage, frozen cells, when a cell freezes the water and, the liquid inside of it that makes up the cytoplasm, the liquid part of a cell. Mm. When it freezes, it crystallizes and breaks through through the cellular walls. It'll actually burst apart cells. So if you're looking at a frozen liver, you'll be able to tell what the liver cells look like, but you'll also be able to see the cellular damage right from the get-go and see how much damage was actually done. So... Yeah, when Batman says, "I know what a frozen liver looks like," yeah, if you've seen one, you know what you're talking about.
Well, I ripped out and I did this on purpose, and it will not air on our show, but I did this on purpose. I went back to World's Finest Podcast review of Secret Origins, Starcrossed, and I ripped out the audio where they're asking about the whole frozen liver thing, and as far as where would Batman get the frozen liver. I mean, where would he get, like, their whole question, because I sent you that audio, as far as, their whole question was, well, he would have had to have broken into the morgue, wouldn't he?
That's the presumption, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a goddamn Batman, I mean, you think he wouldn't?
Well, yeah, but I mean, they were looking for a logical explanation as far as the frozen liver and organs and all that stuff, and I'm like, oh, wait, I have a medical student on my staff, so I can just ask him, and he can tell him.
And if okay, this is Batman. I assume any good martial artist would have some concept of anatomy and physiology, especially someone that is the world's greatest detective. He would have taken anatomy and physiology, so he would have known what the histology of a liver cell would look like to begin with. But he would also be familiar with what freezing cells, what happens to a frozen cell,
mm-hmm.
and the after effects of that. So, that's why in real life, cryostasis doesn't work too well, except in some very rare animals.
Yeah. But,
yeah, he, based on what his past is and what the training that he would have gone through, he would have been able to identify that right off the get-go. Mm.
I think their question was more of how can it be frozen? Because if you look at the events of the Gordanian thing being shot down,
yeah,
and then,
You would imagine that it would be a warm body.
Well, right? That, plus if you look at that event and then the fact that, oh, well, the Thanagarians are going to help us, and they start building this bypass. Well, did they build that, and they bring this up on World's Finest Podcast episode, I think it's 77, yeah, 77. You know, did they build that much of the bypass already in 24 hours since the ship landed or since the ship crashed? And again, how the hell did Batman get a hold of the body and all this stuff? But I think, wasn't he in the ship or was he at the Watchtower?
He was at the Watchtower.
Was at the Watchtower? Oh, okay.
Because Diana was there with him.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine, even with the Flash doing all that work, that it would be done in 24 hours. So I imagine there must have been, like, a couple
of days. Yeah, it had to have been a couple of days.
But, yeah, the Batman would have been able to get in and pull some strings. I mean, if he could pull strings to get Perry to put in Clark at an event like that rather than Lois, I imagine that he could pull enough strings to even get them to get a body to do an inspection. Where if Superman's backing him, I'm imagining the government would be like, yeah, okay, sure, go right ahead.
Yes. What else you got?
Okay, so kryptonite beam. Holy crap.
Yeah, that was... And there was also kryptonite dust, wasn't there?
I don't remember the kryptonite dust. I remember the kryptonite beam.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, what wasn't there... Wasn't there dust residue after the beam hit him?
I'm not sure.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different episode. I remember an episode where Superman gets hit with kryptonite, some form of kryptonite, and it turns into like this dust powder thing, and Flash has to whirly arm it away from him. But I don't know. I could be thinking of another episode.
I think that's another episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Best scene out of this? Not the best, but one of the top ones. Jean's very curious about the technology, and he goes to the foreman, and she's like, it's more advanced than you could understand. It's nth metal. And he's like, well, what properties wouldn't I understand? The extreme energy conduction, or this, or that? And she's just like, gobstopped.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, you show him, Jean.
Yeah.
Yeah, the end. Shayera, you're a cold bitch. You really are. Which side do you think I'm on? Wham! That just made me hate the character.
Yeah, it kind of did. I've got an interesting note, actually. I wrote this down quote for quote, going back to the coverage of the press thing. Someone had to cover that sanitation strike. And then you hear, like a muffled voice on the phone. Don't blame me. Talk to Perry. I looked on the DCAU wiki. That's not Dana Delaney doing Lois Lane's voice. It's on the phone. It's Susan Eisenberg, voice of Wonder Woman.
Oh my!
Because all you hear is, rawr! You don't really hear like an actual line, but you know she's cursing at him.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
This is Lois.
Yeah.
And poor Clark's hearing every single little bit, just even though it's pulled away from him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, it's Hawkman, ... Wait, what the fuck? That ain't no Hawkman.
Oh, God, I thought that at first, too.
And I got this off the wiki as well, and I knew this from the commentary. They mentioned that Hro-Talik is an anagram of Katar Hall, who is the real name of Silver Age Hawkman. Because they were saying in the commentary in Part 3, they couldn't make... DC wouldn't let them. They wouldn't let them make the Hawkman character...
A villain?
A villain. Well, I mean, they kind of make him redeemable at the end, but not really. But they just would not allow them to make Hawkman the out-and-out villain with no redemption whatsoever, so they made a Hawkman-like character. Unlike you, I don't like Hawkgirl's uniform. It's ugly. I don't like that at all. I just don't like it.
I don't like her standby uniform, honestly.
Well, she looks better in a dress, but we'll get to that in Season 3 or 4. Anyway, actually, no, it's Season 5, and we'll get to that. But anyway, World's Finest Podcast pointed this out. When Batman has his disguise in the ship, Hey, look.
What's he supposed to be?
You don't know? Oh, my God. Bad comic book geek. Hey, look, it's Alan Napier. Alan Napier, for those that don't know, much like Lupus, was the actor who played the 1960s Alfred.
Alfred. Oh, God, that's why he looked familiar.
Oh. And he
the
even...
entire time I was like, was that like one of the major characters from like Batman? Like, animated series?
Yeah. Let's see. Just wait for this, try to say this first line. Eek, it's a trap. No, wait, it's a double cross. Holy shit.
Wrong alien species.
Yes. You already said it. Whose side are you really on? Don't you know? Thwap.
Oh, bitch.
And then the funny thing after that little scene and it cuts out to the credits, the first thing I see, the last line I have, hey, that's a different mace design on Hot Girls' mace. Because it is. It's not. It's not the same. It's a different design on the mace. It is. It just is. So yeah. Do we have anything else on part one?
That's all I got for part one.
All right. Let's. Why don't you take it away with part two then?
Okay. In part two, the League is taken prisoner and transported to a holding facility. Hawkgirl returns to the mothership, and Talik commends her on a job well done, but his subordinate, Krager, is suspicious about her sympathies with the League and the humans. Smart man. The League manages to escape the prison ship, which crashes into Metropolis. The League decides to stay hidden. They will need to discard their costumes and assume civilian clothes. The Flash protests for secret identity reasons, but Matt Bank cuts him off, saying that he, always the detective, has already found out that Superman and Flash's alter egos, and then reveals his own. John, Wonder Woman, and Lantern do not have secret identities. The League splits into pairs and makes their way towards Gotham City to rendezvous at Wayne Manor. Dun dun dun! It's tricky, as the Thanagarians have figured out that they disguise themselves as civilians and hold checkpoints for city-to-city travel. This is citizens assist Bruce and Diana. Hro Talik reveals his scars, both mental and physical. Aboard the mothership, Hro reveals the Thanagarian's true plan. The force field generator is actually a hyperspace bypass generator, the last in a series of wormhole relays that will allow the Thanagarians to bypass the Gordanians' defenses and attack their homeworld directly, finally ending the war. But in the process, Earth will be destroyed. To the Thanagarians, it's a sad but necessary sacrifice. Hawkgirl, however, is horrified. She tries to convince Talik to build it on a desolate planet or moon, but he says that it will throw off their calculations. The League meets in the Batcave to puzzle out why the Thanagarians are interested in Earth. Hawkgirl appears, giving them data on the project. Batman accepts the information, then coldly orders her out. Before she goes, she shares a private moment with John, returning his power ring to him. But Krager has planted a bug on Shayera, allowing him to track her to the League's hideout. Thoughts, good sir?
Well, again, I need to point out that I watched this three-parter twice. As I've said before, I have the Justice League Star-Crossed, the movie single-disc DC Kids Collection DVD, where it cuts up the episode, and instead of... It just fades to black on each episode instead of going to credits, so it acts like it's one whole film. And I was watching it, and I watched the film taking the notes. I didn't watch the three-part episodes on the complete series set. So my first note doesn't come until they're in jail. Ooh, she bit him, then squeezed him with her wonder thighs.
Oh, that was a very charged moment. I really... I was thinking, oh God, how far are they going to push this?
Yeah.
But Diana was... She's learned a lot about the Land of Man, I think.
Yeah.
Better she watched a lot of action flicks.
Damn, it just goes to show you that Batman doesn't need to use his hands. Because after she frees him... He just goes to kicking people because his hands are still in the cuffs.
Handcuffs?
Yeah.
You know he's been he had to have gone through training for that.
Oh well, yeah.
There must have been some martial arts training because he was there was a scene where he backflipped something over someone or jumped over someone in a flip, and in the process he actually brought the handcuffs and his arms from behind him directly in front of him.
Yes, he did. The lights lean on me. Damn it, yep. For some strange reason I want to hear that song now. And you said it before, but I'll say it a little bit better. Wally West, Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne, show off. Red hair, it suits you. You think? Change now.
As a ginger, I was like, hey, well, he's got red hair just like me.
Sorry, don't be. Batman the Pimp.
Bat Pimp.
Yeah, exactly. And my final note for this part was, okay, so there are very select few that know Batman's secret identity, and secret is in all capital letters. And now this includes a random restaurant owner? Oh.
Do we know that it's...
I would assume that the restaurateur knows who Wonder Woman is, because it's been clearly stated before that she has no secret identity. Plus, in Maid of Honor, she is everywhere in her uniform outfit, where, you know, people recognize her and want her to do this, want her to do that. So, I'm assuming the restaurant owner recognized her and helped them because of that. But still, I mean regardless. No, it could not be Superman.
Why? They both got similar style builds, black hair.
Oh, they don't. Well, all right, well, the black hair I'll give you, but no, they do not have similar style builds. Superman's chest is easily bigger than Batman's. I mean...
Maybe he thought he was the Flash. Oh, or Aquaman.
Oh, God. Shut up. Fuck Aquaman. Anyways, yeah, but that's all I have for this one. I really enjoy this three-parter. I don't really have a whole lot of notes for it. I think the most notes I have is, on the third part, but, yeah. You want to say anything else about this one? I mean, it's just, so far the story is just like, wow.
Yeah.
It just kicks your ass.
My ass, it has been kicked. Okay, so the first scene where they're going through the jail, and you know you've got the red lit room for Superman to drain his powers. The entire time I'm thinking Batman could definitely get out of this. He's got to be formulating a plan or something. But Diana beats him to the punch.
Yeah.
And the leg squeeze and the knockout. Let's see. Hawker was very tactically correct. As long as the Justice League was out of the public eye and the public didn't think about them, then there wasn't going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Keep them tied up. Don't let them get out. Not a problem. She was totally tactically correct, and she was a bitch for it. How much damage could a discus, or in this case a plate, be done when it's thrown by the Flash? Like, if he was really checking that thing, he would have taken that guard's head off, clean off.
Well, true, but I mean, Superman can control his powers, or if he didn't...
Yeah, I know that the Flash could do it, but if he was really pushing himself...
Yeah.
It just made me think Destructo Disc from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, God.
Oh, and I'm loath to say that, because I really hate Dragon Ball Z fans.
Destructo Disc.
So we get to see Jean in his alien form for a while. There's a scene where Batman grabs instead of the magic mace, we see a magic hammer. And I was like, oh, it's Thor. Wait a second, wrong.
Well, no, it's one of those. No, he had a he had some sort of axe thing, and he grabs the hammer and gives it to Superman and says, here, use this.
There was a scene, he did knock out a guard with the hammer first.
And oh, did he? That. Oh, okay, alright.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. How did this happen? How did they escape? It's the Justice League. That's what happens.
Yeah.
I liked Flash's comment about a little bit of optimism.
Yeah.
That, it just defines his character again as being the true heart of the League.
Yeah.
Let's see. When they're doing the city to city checking for identification, I couldn't help but think of Nazi Germany and papers. That are your papers. Smoochin' the bat. You know she's been waiting for that. It's great to see Alfred. It's even better to see Alfred when he's making one-liner quips, which he does multiple times in this episode.
Yes. I've asked Master Bruce to take out the trash. Mind the glass, sir. Mind the glass.
Yeah. How did Hawkgirl know about the Batcave?
Well, again, it goes back to how did Batman know who Hawkgirl was? That they set that up in season one. Like, if Batman knows who Hawkgirl was, then she must have been here at least a little while before the League formed. And by now, by the time season two airs, we could safely say that they've been together for 5 years. Obviously, because
we don't know that.
Well. They specifically
know that she's been on the planet for 5 years.
Right, right.
It doesn't mean that she suddenly shows up and, oh, hey, let's go fight these aliens.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how she knows where the Batcave is, but at the same time, almost everybody knows where the Batcave is.
Yeah, but still, it's kind of like, you know, it's not something that it's just going to put in the computers.
True.
I loved Superman's comment of, ooh, I'm impressed. Now let's go wreck it.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Throw a batarang at it?
Wait, was that in this one?
Yeah.
Oh, it was, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The Flash pushing random buttons. That's not helping.
Yeah, that's not helping.
Okay, so I had to ask. Batman, really, you're going to leave a charged freeze gun in your Batcave? Really? Really?
Oh, no, all right. Now, honestly, no one really knows if, like, say you're a stranger and you stumble upon the Batcave. You don't know if stuff is charged or stuff is this or stuff is that. Hell, in Batman Beyond, they showed that some of the other suits still had items in them. So, I mean. Even though a lot of people know where the Batcave is, people just don't go there. I mean, people just they just don't. It's not a place. It's kind of like journeying into Batman's mind. You just don't want to go there.
Oh, let's see, what else do I have? Okay, the scene where Jean is essentially psychically raping Talek. Or Krieger, sorry, Krieger.
That's not until the third part.
I've got it for this one.
No, it's in the third part.
Oh, God, my notes are mixed in. Okay, so let's go to the third part then.
Alrighty then. as soon as Shire returns to the mothership, Krieger has her arrested. He plays the recording of her conversation with the League for Hero, feeling both her treachery and her affection for John. Hero is heartbroken but orders her locked up. I don't know if I made a note about it, but technically Krieger copped a feel, because Ro is like, well, where did you get this? On this holocam that I planted on her. And he pulls off her chest piece, or part of her chest piece, the little hawk symbol thing.
That puts a whole new spin on what we have to talk about with that.
Yeah, I told you.
Yeah.
Told you so. Alright, so Krieger leads a strike team to Wayne Manor to eliminate the League. Fully powered now, they beat back the attack and take several prisoners. Unfortunately, Jean is unable to figure out how to pilot Krieger's ship, so he goes deeper and deeper into his mind to find out. However, Krieger's mental defenses manifesting in the form of hawks attack Jean, and his wounds appear on his body in reality. He is able to topple the mental flame inside Krieger, gaining the information he sought while leaving Krieger catatonic. Batman is in command of their strategy. Superman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern attack the command ship. to shut down the force field protecting the hyperspace generator. Batman, Flash, and John infiltrate the Watchtower using the strike team's shuttle and with John masquerading as Krager, and incapacitate the occupational force. Batman explains that he plans to take the Watchtower out of orbit and use it as a missile to destroy the generator. He and the others load the unconscious Thanagarians into the escape pods, but Batman launches the pod with himself staying behind, saying that he has to guide the tower in manually. Gentlemen, it's been an honor. While Superman and Wonder Woman battle the Thanagarian fighters, Lantern breaks into the ship to reach the force field controls. Talik is waiting for him, wanting revenge for his stolen love. As Wonder Woman fights her way through another part of the ship, she passes Hot Girl's cell. "I should leave you to burn," she says, but releases her. The generator complete, the Thanagarians begin the activation to open the hyperspace gate. The Watchtower travels down through the atmosphere, piloted by Batman. As the heat increases, the tower begins to break up. Hearing where Batman is, Superman breaks off from the battle and flies to intercept him. In the control room, Lantern fights hard against Talik, but loses and is knocked out. Talik erases his battle axe for the kill, but Hot Girl appears, telling him to stop. He attacks her, and they battle even more ferociously. He beats her, and she begs him, for the sake of us, not to kill Earth's innocents. He gives her the almost deadly shock and then tells her, "There is no us anymore, Shiera." He then throws her to the ground, just a fallen traitor and a soldier with a job to do. Lantern regains his consciousness and attacks Talik again, but is very weak. As Talik punches him, Lantern taunts him and enrages Talik, swings his axe, and inadvertently hits the shield surrounding the force field control, resulting in an explosion. He is knocked out and the shield drops, allowing Lantern with Shire's help to deactivate the force field. Superman streaks after the Watchtower as Batman, overcome by the heat and smoke, finally passes out. Superman breaks in and pulls him free just before it hits, destroying the generator. Aboard the ship, Lantern, Hot Girl, and Wonder Woman are confronted by more Thanagarian soldiers, but Hro orders them to stand down. Their mission has failed, and there is no point in fighting anymore. The Thanagarian forces leave Earth, abandoning Hot Girl. At Wayne Manor, Hot Girl waits while the League debates whether to allow her to remain. Alfred tells her that regardless of what the others decide, he still considers her a hero. In the conference room, Flash and Wonder Woman are the strongest for and against votes, respectively. Jean is also sympathetic, and Superman wants to trust her, but warns that there is great risk in doing so. John is silent. Ultimately, Batman realizes that they are just going in circles and says that they should just vote. Superman is about to announce the League's decision, but Hot Girl interrupts him, saying that she's resigning from the Justice League, and she goes. As she goes, John and Superman say that that's their duty to rebuild the League. Outside Wayne Manor, John asks Hot Girl where she'll go now, and she says she isn't sure, but that she wants to be somewhere where the world isn't resting on her shoulders. She tells him that she never lied about one thing. She does love him. She flies away, leaving him to say, "I love you too." Thoughts?
Oh, okay. Jean scares me.
Jean scares everybody.
Jean, no, this is, oh god, the thought of a psychic rape like that just really bothers the hell out of me.
Get that information somehow.
Yeah, I agree, but it's to see the lengths that he would go through. Do we want to jump onto the whole what we saw in that sequence?
Well, my first note is we kind of mentioned this earlier. It's more of when she flies out of the Batcave. It was, hey, how does Shiera know a secondary entrance to the Batcave? What the fuck? And then my other note about the whole scene that we see in Krager's head was, Krager clearly wants Shiera out of the way. It's even shown when Jean breaks into his mind with Shiera's head crumbled at Krager and Hero's feet. So, would you say that that imagery was slightly homosexual?
It could be construed that way.
See, at first that might have clipped in my head. And then when you look at the Thanagarians, when you look at how they're portrayed in this, visually, there's a lot of Egyptian-styled imagery. So you definitely can see... When you think about it, the two statues that would be Pharaoh and Pharaohess, or multiple pharaohs, so coupled, if you were to look at, as you said, that he does kind of cop a feel with Shaer by grabbing the recording device and chess piece.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of getting cyclical, but stay with me. Okay, so you've got him blatantly copying a feel in front of everyone, including her betrothed.
Mm-hmm.
His complete loyalty to Pro. The grabbing of her could have been used as a power play to put her in his place and try to show dominance, and maybe in some way it could be like he really does have a thing for Pro,
mm-hmm.
and he wants Shaer out of the picture so that he can try to, you know, move in. That's entirely possible. It's also entirely possible that he sees her as higher up in the command structure, which we see when she comes in and says, "You're in my way."
And he says, "Likewise."
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe there is some subtext there. Maybe the subtext is also that he just wants her out of the way from a military standpoint and trying to cement his second in command.
I'd say it's a bit of
maybe
both.
I mean, it's entirely possible. And I never would have thought of that if you hadn't said anything.
I wanted to bring it up, and we brought it up off air because you've said in the past that you are gay. So I didn't want to offend anybody as much as, you know, I usually normally offend people anyway. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it and figure out what it could possibly mean. And I think we're both in agreement that it could mean either one, or it could be a little bit of both.
I think that's something that we should ask Mr. Tim if we ever get the opportunity.
Yeah, I haven't worked on that one yet, but I will in the future.
That's just one of those. It's not a big thing, but
it
got me curious.
Yeah, it's just one of those nitpicks that people can read too much into, and I saw it as, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I saw it as a little bit of both. I believe in the commentary, Bruce Timm said something about a lot of people missed, you know, the fact that the hot girl statue is at their feet and they're standing side by side, and it was something about because Krager wants to be close to Hero or something. I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch the commentary to make sure I was getting those words correct, but because I don't actually remember it, but you know, it's just one of those little nitpicky things, I guess.
It's one of those, like, it could go either way, and it's really curious. Like, are we looking too far into it? Are we not looking far enough?
Yeah.
What else? We get to see poor Alfred again, stuck cleaning up everything, getting a laser shot at him by the Flash.
We need to also bring up that, this is the last appearance of Alfred in the DCAU.
Oh, which sucks, because he's such a cool character.
Well, I know, but I think that this being the last appearance of Alfred in the DC Animated Universe, he
goes out with a bang.
Oh, yeah. He went out with a good showing. That whole scene with him and Hot Girl talking back and forth and him giving the advice, even though he says, "I'm neither a superhero nor a soldier." Yeah, you were a soldier in your past life or in your younger years or whatever. From some continuities, he is. Yeah. I don't know. What else you got?
Let's see. The scene where they're getting ready to fight John and Hro.
Yeah.
And he walks, you see him in the shadows, and all you see are the two glowing eyes. And he walks out of the shadows, and you can tell he's pissed, but...
Oh, you mean in the cave?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when he's... Well, yeah, that was Krager. Hurl wasn't there, but it was Krager. Krager goes, they're hiding here somewhere, and then you see... And no, you don't even see it. You hear John say, uh-uh, all through hiding. And you see his eyes, and then you see him... I believe I got an image. I got a screen cap of him still in the dark, but you can see his lantern symbol in his eyes. So I'll have to look for that and see.
That's creepy cool. But
yes, it was.
I was, when I first found out that John was going to have glow in the dark eyes because of the being so in tune with the lantern energies.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty gay. I mean, yes, it's even coming from me, but that was lame. Like, well, when I was younger, I'm like, that's pretty stupid.
Well, but Bruce, like, go ahead.
But. At this one scene, I truly, like, as I've come through a guy, I appreciate it more, but now I'm just kind of like, wow, that's, holy crap, that's really just, it floored me.
Yeah. Well, Bruce Timm mentions that, and it's not in this commentary, but he mentions on some of the special features on the Season 1, Season 2 set, or in the Season 1, Season 2 discs in the complete series, that, you know, honestly, it wasn't purposefully that they picked the black Green Lantern. It was just something that they were going for diversity as far as, you know, being diverse with the cast. And I mean, hell, if you look at Hot Girl, Maria Canales is slightly Hispanic, so that she has that slight Hispanic twinge to her voice. You take Ro, who is played by Victor Rivers, who is, his voice is, you can tell he's Hispanic. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they were just going for different voice inflections. As far as John, they said that, well, what, you know, cool gimmick can we give him that shows that he's had this power for a while? He's had the Green Lantern ring for a while, and he's done all this stuff. Well, why don't we infuse, like, he's been wearing the ring so long that the energy is just infused into his body. Into his entire body, not just his eyes. And that's why the whole eye thing works, I guess.
Well, there's different effects for different Green Lanterns as well. Yeah. Like, okay, I know you don't like me saying them, but the coolest thing that I like about Guy Gardner's ring is he's a ringslinger. He uses his ring constantly. You know, if he's flying through space, he will conjure two bikini-clad girls feeding him food while he's laying down on the couch. I mean, this is the type of guy that will use his ring constantly, and it's gotten to the point where his ring just sparks all the time, because it's ready to go. It's so linked in with him. So it makes sense for someone like him who uses his... He does use his mind a lot to build his constructs, we see in the comics, from the inside out. Like, he specializes in the architecture of things and makes things more solid when he builds them from the analytical nature of his character. Yeah, so I guess it does make sense with his eyes to analyze stuff and comes through that way.
That's the other thing with this episode. This was the first, this three-parter was the first one where they actively used constructs. You had the drill, you had the shield, we'll talk about the other weapon in a little while when I make my note about it. Yeah. What else? You got anything else for this part?
Yeah. I guess we've got another page.
Oh, really?
yeah. Okay. Batman's electrified brass knuckles. It's the second time we've seen it, and that's so cool. I want a pair.
You know what my note about that was?
What's that?
Electro punch Batman. I want that toy.
It's like a joy buzzer.
Yeah.
Okay, so you think Batman would have learned from the whole episode with Aquaman, that story arc?
Mm-hmm.
He's doing the sociopathic sacrificing himself to make a martyr thing again. The same shtick.
You think
he would have learned from when he needed Green Lantern to, you know, shield him from radiation?
Yeah.
We totally see all the team just go out and kick ass against the Armada. Superman and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
They were just ripping everybody to shreds, even Jean.
Well, the thing with Wonder Woman, she has a BFG, because she rips the big fucking gun out of the ship.
And she's just like, bam, 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 this is fun, bam, bam.
Yeah, yeah. They mentioned in the commentary that, you know, honestly, Wonder Woman is possibly the most powerful Justice Leaguer, because they say in the commentary, I think it was Dwayne McDuffie that brought it up, that, you know, for every 10 guys, the rest of the Justice League takes out, she takes out twice that.
Yep. She's just as, almost as invulnerable as Superman.
Yeah.
She can take a beating. She's not weak to magic.
Nope. I'll bring this up here because I thought it was really funny. Any last words? Yeah, you can kiss my axe.
That was such a good little comment.
Yep.
Oh, God, what else? She gets another magic mace. That's always good. Okay, the effect of taking a huge satellite, because that's what it is, and plunging it into the Earth, into that... I mean, mind you, it wasn't the Gobi Desert, but can you imagine what that's going to do to, like, just the global impact of that?
Well...
All that sand is going straight up into the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. Well, plus, think of Batman's decreasing profit margin.
Oh, God, true.
Well, he did say in the beginning of the series in Secret Origins, when Clark asked
him... how much it costs.
Well, no, he didn't even say that. He said, Superman asked him, how did you get this past your investors, Bruce? A line item in the aerospace R&D.
Diana being the true Amazon and just, who's next?
Yeah, that line was awesome.
The Alfred putting everything into perspective, which we already covered, that it seemed very, I want to say Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about, like, how some things Shakespeare did were, in the end of the story, you know, only specific types of people, not the kings, not the people with power, but the common man sitting there and making the last comments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, he gives really good advice.
He does.
And then I wrote down, well, we know how Wonder Woman voted.
Yeah.
And then the next note is, Flash.
He's the heart of the league.
Well, it's not even just that. Okay, set that aside for a second, okay? Technically, they've been setting up this whole brother-sister thing with him and Hawk Girl. And that will come back when we go Unlimited as well. But Flash in the beginning, and I think it was said before by us or by Mike and James over at WFP, you know, in the beginning of the series, he's just hitting on everything that moved. And he kind of stopped hitting on Hot Girl, and it's become more of a brother-sister thing, which I actually like a little bit better.
You know, I never noticed that until you actually did say.
Yep.
So, wow, yeah. But
well, it'll most definitely come up in, is it Panic in the Sky or Divided We Fall? Yeah. It'll definitely come up in the episode Divided We Fall. I'll point that out to you then, though.
I'm going to be looking for it now.
Yep.
But, yeah, that one scene where... You know he forgave her.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's trying... You could tell how hard he was trying to convince everybody.
Yep. Very much so.
And it was honestly really heartbreaking.
Yes, yes it was.
But yeah, that's all I've got.
Yeah, that's all I've got too. So I think we are going to... I think we're going to go to some other... Maybe some quotes or something.
We're looking for Bruce Wayne. We're friends.
Of course, Master Bruce is expecting you. This way, please.
So, Jeeves, do you come with the place, or does Master Bruce rent you just for parties?
I've been in service here since the Master was in diapers.
Now there's a picture.
Your guests have arrived, sir.
You're late.
Nice to see you too.
Hey, that's a giant dinosaur.
And I thought Batman was the detective.
We were just speculating why the Thanagarians are really here.
Obviously not to protect us.
But if the Gordanians aren't actually anywhere near Earth, why do they need to build that force field?
If it is a force field,
then what is it?
I can tell you.
You've got a lot of nerve showing up here.
We should thank you. It saves us having to hunt you down.
I didn't come to fight. I came to help.
Hawk people all over the planet? Martial law? Us getting chased like dogs? I don't think we could take much more of your help.
The situation is worse than you think. They're building a hyperspace bypass. When it's activated, it'll destroy the planet and everything on it. Here, this has all the information on the project. Believe me, I didn't know the magnitude of Talek's plans.
We'll check it out. There's the door.
Aren't you going to turn your back on me too?
Last time I let my guard down, you sucker punched me.
It wasn't personal.
Keep telling yourself that.
I did what I thought was right then, and that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Let's go wreck it.
How? It's behind a force field.
A force field controlled from the command ship. Go shut it down. I'll take care of the generator.
That thing's the size of a city. What are you gonna do, throw a batarang at it?
Something like that.
Good hit!
Spread out. They're hiding here somewhere.
All through hiding. Come and get some.
Let's use our inside voice.
Tails, I win.
Your weapons are pitiful.
Wait for it. Let's go.
Mind the glass, sir.
I want you, Superman, and Wonder Woman to go to the command ship and shut down the force field.
And the rest of us?
You're going to help me retake the watchtower.
It's crawling with Thanagarian soldiers. How are you planning on getting inside?
With that.
Alright, so, we're pretty much done with Justice League, and I ripped out the special DVD audio from the single-disc star-crossed film Hawkman from Comics to Cartoon. So you will hear that next.
Our original intention was to actually use the actual Hawkman character from the comics. We wanted to use the name Hawkman, we wanted to use his his Thanagarian name, which is Kitar Hall. While he wasn't an out-and-out villain, he was definitely not what you would consider a heroic character. He was somewhat of a bad guy.
Willow Talloc is a Hawkman. We can't say that he's definitively the DC Hawkman that everybody has known over the years.
The solution that we came up with was to make him a Hawkman-like character, but not actually be Hawkman. We never refer to him as Hawkman. His costume isn't identical to any Hawkman that has ever been in the comics.
Our guy is basically the same guy, only if he had stayed on Thanagar and become a warrior instead of coming to Earth and, you know, marrying Hawkgirl and becoming a detective. But it's basically the same guy. Roe Talloc is an anagram of Kitar Hall.
There have been so many different versions of Hawkman in the comics. They kind of rebooted the character and kind of came up with a new origin for him, and he was a slightly different Hawkman. And at one point, Hawkman was a reincarnation of an Egyptian god. And at another point, he was, you know, there have been so many different versions of him. You know, he was a detective. No, he was a museum curator. No, he was this, he was that. So you could pick and choose, you know, 10 different versions of Hawkman to be in our cartoon.
I think that Hawkman ranks extremely high amongst important DC heroes and DC legends. This guy's been around for years, and his legend begins back before a lot of the characters we think of as being possibly even more famous than him.
There was a version called Hawkworld that had a very military approach, and we sort of drew from that.
I've read all the stuff. You know, I've been reading comics for years, and I like Hawkman quite a bit. This guy is coming a lot more from a military point of view, though. You know, he's got a job to do. There are a lot of lives dependent on him. He's going to get it done, and he's not going to let you get in the way.
Our version of Thanagar and the Hawkman-type character are somewhat different than they are in the comics. There's still a lot of things that are still very, very true to the spirit of the comic.
The original Hawkman's costume is one of the great superhero costumes in the history of the medium, and they just sort of came in and topped it, you know?
I think ours is a close to a version of Hawkman that's existed in the comics, so we didn't stray too far. The general motif is there. The helmet is basically the same. The wings are the same.
A guy with wings, what could be better than that? One thing that always bothered me in the comic books about Hawkman, though, was that he had these really cool wings, but they weren't real wings. They were sort of like these strap-on things that didn't flap and that floated and all of that. And from my point of view, I wanted a Hawkman who was a real hawk. And so we made sure that when we did our version of the Thanagarians that they had real wings.
At first glance, when you look at anyone with wings, they don't quite look that formidable. So when designing Hawkman, we took that into account and tried to make sure he came off as more of a warrior type, a more tough, in-charge kind of guy. So we kind of went a little bit away from the feather headdress and the bare chest, and so we emphasized armor and the weapons, and just his whole attitude was a lot more threatening.
Now, he's pretty tough. As you'll note, the Thanagarians make very powerful weapons. Hawkgirl has a mace, but so does everybody on the ship's got something at least that tough. Ro is the leader of those guys. He's probably the best fighter on the ship. He's certainly the smartest. He had no problem defending himself against the Power Ring, which is one of the most powerful weapons in our continuity. So he's tough. I gotta say, Hawkman versus Green Lantern in the comics is about a 3-second fight. You know, Green Lantern just smushes him. Ro's quite a bit more powerful than Hawkman.
He's kind of a classic anti-hero. Not exactly a good guy, not exactly a bad guy. He has elements of both, and I think it makes him an interesting character.
Humans working as slaves?
Unfortunate, but necessary. We are on an unforgiving schedule.
I like the version we have chosen to do of Hawkman, because he's a little edgier. The Hawkman from the comics tends to be a nice guy, which, you know, he's a superhero, he has to be, but ours is a lot more conflicted about his duty and his role with Hawkgirl, as far as just being, he's in love with her, but he's got a job to do. In the comics, they were just either already dating and you watched them do that, or they were already married, and it was kind of tame. So I like the tension that we've set up with the two characters.
When we first cast Hawkgirl, for instance, way back when we first were casting for the Justice League series, I had suggested we might look into casting actresses who had a slight accent. And Maria Canales came in, and she's Hispanic, and she has just the very, very faintest accent.
This was a military mission. I'd sworn an oath of secrecy, and I couldn't tell anyone. Sorry, but not even you.
It's very, very light, so that kind of informed our casting decisions on for the rest of the Thanagarians.
There was an actor that I've always been fond of, his work. His name is Victor Rivers, and he's a very exotic-looking man, and he also is Hispanic and has a very interesting quality to his voice.
Take a strike squad back to the surface. Search every house, every building, look under every rock. Find them.
Victor Rivers had, again, he had played with us in the past. He had played a number of different parts on the Batman Beyond show, like guest villains and things like that.
I think Victor did such a fine job of finding both the military strength in this character and then just letting us peek into the emotional side and the emotional feelings he has for Hawkgirl.
I always enjoyed the surprises we kind of throw at people about what they perceive a character to be and then throw a twist on it. So, no, it wasn't what I would have expected when I first found out we were going to do a Hawkman show, but it worked out very well.
Watching this show come together has been a long time in the coming for longtime comics fans. You know, knowing that that sort of history is coming full circle is a huge payoff for kids like me.
Hopefully, people will come away thinking that Hawkman is a powerful character who was doing his duty and will understand that he's not a bad guy.
DC Comics made the right call. We changed the character enough so that he really is not the Hawkman from the comics. He's not the Ketar Hall character. I think the story wouldn't have worked as well if he had been, if we had literally called him Ketar Hall and called him Hawkman. So he's definitely a loose adaptation of that character, but he's not a strict interpretation of that character.
Okay, well, as I said before, we're pretty much done with Season 2. The next episode you will hear is Episode 12, which will be the final thoughts on Season 2. Overall, it was one hell of a bang to end the season, as well as possibly the series. Yeah, just wow.
I agree.
Yes, just wow. So I guess thank you for joining us here on the Secret Origins Podcast. There's no ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website geekcastradio.com. You can comment on each post. Join the forums predaconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. We still have no feedback. I would also like to know if any of you guys that are listening are in other countries other than the United States, because if you're going to leave us iTunes reviews and you're in Canada or Mexico or the UK or any other country other than the US, please email me tfg1mike@gmail.com with a copy of your iTunes review, because we cannot see them if they're not in the US store. Or at least I can't, because, yeah, I don't live in other countries. But anyway, follow us on Twitter. Show name there is Secret Origins. Mine is tfg1mike. What is your Twitter?
Caminiti Style. CaminitiStyle.
Become a fan on Facebook. Search Geekcast Radio Network. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins Podcast. I wish you'll join us next time when we'll be recapping Justice League Season 2. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Lupus Convoy.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
This is Snapper Carr reporting. In a stunning turn of events, the Thanagarian forces have ended their occupation of Earth, departing for locations unknown. Once again, the world owes a debt of gratitude to the selfless heroism of the Justice League.
You never asked how we vote.
It doesn't matter.
So, where are you gonna go?
I don't know. Someplace where the fate of the world isn't in my hands. Someplace where there are no more secrets, no more lies.
all along.
I love you, John. I never lied about that.
Kiss my axe.
Gentlemen, it's been an honor.